Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're joined by Trevor Cuthbert. How are you getting on, Trevor?
Not so bad, Martin. Not so bad.
Good to see you. It's kind of few and far between we tend to see each other. You came over for LRM Live this year as well, which was good.
Yeah, great show. I really enjoyed it.
So for some of our listeners that probably don't know who Trevor is, we should probably say who he is.
We probably should. Trevor, why don't you introduce yourself and let everyone know exactly what it is you do?
Well, the connection here with you guys is I am a contributor to Landover Monthly magazine, primarily in the technical section. From time to time, do the Writer's Rover column as well. But since 2013, I've been full-time involved with Landrovers. When I went self-employed and started my own business, primarily re-chassising Defenders.
I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
Because I remember you giving up like the day job to take over what was essentially your hobby and turning it into a business.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago.
The day job, I did have a good job. And I had, during that time, I'd sort of become distributor for Ireland for Richard Chassis. And they used to say to me, we need somebody in Ireland fitting chassis. There's a business in it there, Trev. And I said, to heck with that. I'm not walking away from a good job to start a business just because you guys say so. However, I lost my job. And
okay, sort of like a catalyst to...
Yeah, and I sort of thought, initially devastated, and I thought, right, I need to apply for another job. And I couldn't see anything that interests me, and there was a lot of people looking for work at the time. And I thought, right, I'll have a go at this, yeah.
Because aren't you our like longest standing contributor for Land of Monthly? Weren't you with issue 2 or something?
I don't think it was as early as that. I first did a column called LRM Web Watch in about, I think from about 2005.
Wow. Okay, so 7 years into the... Now, this is all coming back to me now. Yeah, because you started Land Rover Addict, didn't you?
Yes. So there was an online forum run by or set up by Land Rover Enthusiast magazine.
Yes.
It became a very, very popular forum. But Land Rover Enthusiast, they were getting criticism and one thing and another from the members of the forum. And they decided they didn't want to run a forum anymore and they were just going to shut it down. And it's a long story how it came about, but I ended up taking over the forum and I knew nothing about servers and software and so on, but I...
There's a community, it's like a community sitting there ready to...
So I started, I took over control of the forum, started running it, put a few people's noses out of joint, I have to say. But then I realized a couple of months in, it was going well, but I was paying for everything. There was nothing in the agreement when I took the forum over that I couldn't get advertising or sponsorship. And Richard Hyle Thomas of LRM.
Yes, yeah, so founding editor of LRM. Yeah.
He approached me and he said, we'd like to advertise on your forum. And by the way, do you fancy trying to write a column?
Right, okay.
Yeah. So tied in with the forum LRM WebWatch. So that's kind of where it started.
These were back in the day. I remember, so in the magazine, there would be like, if you were a company and had a website, you would get your, you'd buy like a little box ad that said web boxes. So the fact that you could just go, oh, they've got a website, I'm going to go on it, because it was new.
Yeah.
Like, it was completely new. We take it for granted now, but people are actually advertising the fact that they had one.
I remember Addict, Land Rover Addict, quite well, actually.
Didn't it get to like 200,000 followers or something? Perhaps that's what you said when you sold it to LRM.
I can't remember.
There's a lot of people.
I can't remember the numbers. Yeah, I got a lot of flack for selling it to LRM too. That was when Dennis Publishing...
That's right. My old boss, Jeff Love.
Jeff Love.
So he saw that as a community. And, well, if we could sell a magazine to every single person that is on this forum, then, yeah, rub our hands together sort of thing. And
well, Jeff did this deal with me. So contrary to what a lot of people thought, a whole pile of money did not immediately change hands for the forum. We had this two-year agreement that I would get a share of the advertising revenue that he started to get.
Oh, did we get any? Can't remember.
Must have been some.
Well,
if, I don't know if it was.
It relates directly to me going self-employed, because by the time I had decided to go self-employed, I needed to build a workshop. And I said, hey, Jeff, that 2 years is up. How much money do you owe me?
Oh, okay.
And he came good with his promise, and he paid me.
Okay.
And that went a large way to building the new workshop.
Wow, there we go.
So there you go. If you want a new workshop in your place, Martin, start four of them and then flog it to me.
Okay.
There you go.
That's an interesting insight, though, into the sort of the lore of how that came about.
But back then, so forums, like Facebook now has obviously taken over from a lot of forums. There are a lot of active forums, but Facebook became the communication tool for many a group, didn't it?
Yes.
Beyond the forum. And
for better and for worse.
Yeah, definitely. The forums are full of... So we had a situation probably... Because we ended up closing Land Rover Alex, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
You end up with like a half dozen people.
Send your hate mail to editorial.
Yeah. not to my address, but because I started it. I started LRM in January 2011,
mm-hmm.
and so I kind of grew up because I'm not that young, but like consuming the content that you used to put in the tech section, and I blame Trevor entirely for me taking Land Rovers to pieces. You know, I came to LRM with a. Exactly where I am now, with a chassis kind of rolling, going, oh, this is Trevor. I want to work here and get that a little bit closer to Trevor, because he can help me undo what this
pickle you've got yourself into.
I've spent the last 14 years with unfinished projects, it seems.
Yeah, well, when I started writing for the tech section, it was very much from the point of view is I'm an amateur, and this is how I did it on my driveway or my makeshift workshop. So therefore, you can do it too. And that seemed to catch the attention or imagination of a lot of people. These days, I'm a bit more experienced, so I can't profess to be the amateur on the driveway.
It's a business, isn't it? I suppose it's a bit different. But because then it's like galvanized chassis were kind of new and a novelty almost. Now it's kind of...
It was unusual then.
Yeah, very unusual.
Now it's kind of the norm.
The norm.
Yeah.
It's funny, you mentioned back sort of early 2000s, I suppose. Neil Watterson's got a Richard chassis under his Series 2A, which has been on there for over 20 years.
Wow.
And it's, that was, so he was kind of an early adopter, I guess, of galvanised chassis. It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
How things have changed over the time. But Steve, you've got exciting news, exciting project news.
I've literally just got back from dropping my all-new DDS bulkhead off to the painters.
Things are happening.
Yeah, they are. And by this time next week, so we're recording this on a Friday, you'll probably listen to this. So in 2 days after you've listened to this, it should be back. Painter was, he'd not seen an E-coated bulkhead before. Mm-hmm. He said, is it similar to like new panel? He's used to dealing with cars and panels. But he was like, how much prep does that need? I said, well, it doesn't actually look like it needs any prep. Just a light scotch,
mm-hmm.
scotching over and crack on. But he's keen. Yeah, he's not so keen on it. So I've done the seam sealer. Yeah. So I followed the guide of the seam sealer where it is, and he's not, because I masked it to create a nice neat line, because you know brushing it on's a bit, feels a bit crude, and where I've pulled the masking tape off, it's giving it like a lip, and he's not so keen on that.
A hard edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a hard edge, so he's worried that it's not. Because I didn't key it first. I just thought it'd stick like glue.
Seam sealer's normally pretty forgiving.
But it's not on the edge. So he's like peeling it with his nail going, because most of it you won't see because it's around the footwells, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there is that little bit across where the... Do you call that like a... It's like a gutter, isn't it? Where the bonnet...
Back edge of the bonnet.
That bit there, there's one seam that is visible.
Right.
And he was like, I might do that again. Right. So he goes, I saw.
A polite way of saying, what is this?
Yeah. No. He wants the job to be perfect.
Yeah.
So, because he's a perfectionist. Anyway, he says, I said, well, do you want me to drop my tin of, because I bought like a litre tin of seam sealer, right? And I've used probably an egg cupful, really, because it goes for miles.
Yeah.
And he goes, I've got some here on the shelf. Right? So he goes to this cabinet like this, and he pulls a tin out that looks like it was from 1945. And he goes, I don't really use it. Well, you don't say this tin. He goes, oh, it's full, you know. I said, no, I'll bring mine in. Because he's not so keen on it.
Right.
Seemed weirdly. So
interesting.
But I've committed to colour. So he's going to buy all the paint in one go. I'll unveil the colour when it's done.
Paint reveal. Instagram.
Oh, that's all about the gram, isn't it? Oh, when mate, that goes on. Yeah.
It's maximum Instagram.
But the paint's all bought in one batch.
He's going to do it. And then, more exciting news, in fact, yesterday, sounds like all I'm doing is running around doing my own projects in work time. yes, I am. No, I'm not. Did work all weekend, billing, to be fair to me. So.
Yeah, so you're listening to this. Billing was a few weeks ago now. But, yeah, that's...
When you listen to this, it'll be like 10 days ago.
No, it'll be further than that.
Oh, really?
Due to the unique way I've structured the podcast schedule, this will be a little bit further.
Do we have another one going in?
Huh?
I can't remember where we're at.
Well, this is it, Steve. This is why you leave it to me to these things out.
So basically, Martin is the brand, the operator.
But,
so yeah, my update from yesterday is the rear tub is back as well.
It's serious progress.
I didn't want to bombard the painter with two big parts. I want to see the bulkhead first. A, make sure I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
And the colour.
Yeah, sure.
And then the rear tub is literally, so Defender Rear Tubs, Phoenix Automotive. Defender Rear Tubs is a brand within Phoenix Automotive. They've rebuilt the tub basically with lots of new parts and not so many of the old ones.
Isn't it fabulous that we can get all these parts now?
Unbelievably so.
You can get new bulkheads. If you go back 3 or 4 years,
yeah,
you couldn't get hold of a bulkhead hardly at all.
Mm.
You were fixing old ones and galvanizing them. You can get tubs now. The other thing DDS are doing are the fly screens. So if you're fitting a new bulkhead, you can now get the fly screens for the vents. They weren't available for a long time.
So I didn't even think about them. So I was thinking about using my old ones, but... How are you going to put slightly aged, slightly rusted? You're just not going to do it, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the early ones were riveted on, and you can reuse them. But from what 300 TDI onwards, they were steel ones that were spot welded in.
Right.
And they're
Who are they?
They're a pain to use. But the early aluminium ones.
So can you? So are DDS doing the rivets on ones?
Yes.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah.
Because that's pallets, mate. I was thinking, oh, no, we have to get the MIG welder out here.
It's funny, we were saying just before this, Steve, you've kind of made a rod for your own back, really, because now everything has got to be, you've got new tub, new bulkhead, new doors, possibly new wings. That standard of bodywork is going to be so high, you've got to keep that up with everything else.
Yeah, but I've worked out, so the tub now sits in... So I've got this... I kind of accidentally bought another motorbike, right, which I don't actually want. Because my uncle gave up riding his bike because he's in his 70s. And I said, well, I'll sell it for you because he's got Parkinson's, so can't ride it anymore. Anyway, it's like a boat anchor of a bike. It weighs 290 kilos. That's in the way all the time. So I've the bike, the tub now sits where the bike should go. The bike's now sitting outside.
Because that's the correct order.
I value the tub greater than the bike, basically. Mm-hmm. So the tub now tub's kind of in my way. So I realised my garage isn't big enough, but I can't build a bigger workshop. But Trevor, you were saying you've built the garage or your workshop back in, what,
2013.
2013,
so, I was lucky enough that my back garden was big enough that I could build a work. I had an existing workshop that I built myself. It was sort of a bit Heath Robinson. And part of that still exists as a lean-to to the new workshop. But I had the space there, and luckily the planners saw it my way and gave me permission to build it. But that process took, what, 6-7 months before I could build it? And I was also at a standing start. I had no customers or no business. But so during that time, while I was getting the planning permission, I went and drove a bin lorry for Belfast City Council, and I bought trade-ins from Frank Jameson, who's a highly respected landowner specialist in County Antrim.
Okay.
So I'd buy a Discovery 2 that he'd traded in that he didn't want to retail. I'd bring it home, clean it up, polish it, maybe MOT it if it needed it, and sell it on, make a bit of a profit too.
Yeah, just to keep ticking over for a while.
Yeah.
Is it? Are you still doing those kind of things, or are you back to just re-chassising?
Really just the re-chassising. I mean, when I started, I had these ideas. I remember one guy bought a Discovery from me, and he was a part-time farmer and a part-time lorry driver. And I thought, well, I've got my HGV. I could get a part-time lorry driving job so that if the business is not...
Yeah, between there, jobs, do a bit of agency work, yeah, something like that.
And in the first year, I kind of thought I would have to do something like that. And then it just took off. After the first year, I had a waiting list of about 6 months. And ever since then, it's been, well, more like 12 months.
Wow.
So what's your sort of like kind of typical time frame? Because are you on your own? You no other staff or anything?
I have a guy works with me. I've known him since 2015. A fellow called Robert Kiss. He's a very, very talented welder and fabricator. And he was helping me out with some of the heavier work from time to time. And he would go from one employment to another. You know, he'd be employed welding up forklifts or whatever, and then somebody would piss him off and he'd move to another job. And I said to him, Robert, you could make a good living self-employed. And eventually, I caught him at the right moment when I said that again, and he has become self-employed. So I've shot myself in the foot because I don't, he's really busy now. So I don't have his help so much.
So he's got too much of his own stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But largely speaking, I've always done it myself.
So for anyone that's got a Land Rover, obviously you can speak for many of the people out there that are buying a Land Rover that's kind of semi-rotten, because let's be honest, some of them are. What's your take on assessing it? So you're obviously re-chassing most of what comes through your doors. They're there purely to be re-chassed, or are you doing other sort of repairs?
At the beginning, in the early days, life was nice and simple like that. They'd come in, they'd want a new chassis and maybe a clutch and some new shocks or something. But these days, they want so much more.
The whole thing, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just finishing off a 110 station wagon at the moment. And it's had the chassis, the bulkhead, the doors, the sails and B posts, timing belt, all the oils changed, you know, the whole brakes, the whole lot. It's great. It's work. It all pays the same. But when a job comes in that you've sort of allowed or booked for, say, 2 or 3 weeks and ends up taking 2 months or more, it pushes everything back.
Of course, yeah.
So that can be problematic. But in terms of assessing them, these days I know what to expect. People will ask me, can you have a look at it and see if it's worth doing? Or if it's repairable, and I say, well, look, you're kind of asked the wrong guy, because
everything's repairable.
Everything's repairable.
How deep your pockets, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
It depends what you want.
Yeah, it's what the car means to you. And
there was one where the guy, this is early on, but 2015, I think it was, and he sent up a high capacity pickup, high mileage 19J, from, I think it was Cork, County Cork. And it was delivered up to me. And then he said, before you go ahead, could you just put it on the ramp and assess it? And right enough, it needed a lot. So I gave him an estimate of cost. And he said, no, I've got my eye on something else. I'm going to buy that instead. He says, do you want the old one?
Okay.
Ended up keeping it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is now the red one that I rebuilt for the magazine series, NRM series. Was a lot of the parts came from that high cap. That's about the only one that decided not to go ahead.
Yeah, I think these Land Rovers get under people's skin, don't they? And I mean, you know, budget, everyone has a budget. Doesn't matter how wealthy you are, everyone has a kind of estimation. But actually, when you get set into it, you think, no, blow it. I've got to do it properly and do it right.
Yeah, often when you give people the quotation, the chassis is going to cost that, the labor, and then you sort of roughly estimate what the other things are going to cost, they'll have to go away and think about it. And usually they come back and they book in with me.
It's cheaper than buying a new one. Yeah. We can't get them new anyway, but
they may have thought long and hard about that at the time. You know, that's a lot of chunk of money I'm going to spend. Then by the time it comes to me,
oh, I want this, and I want that, and I want the other dot as well. Yeah, you know, and suddenly that budget is doubled.
But once they've committed, I don't know, £20,000, then the an extra 10 is neither here nor there.
They're going to do it once, aren't they? And
do you know something I kind of learned yesterday? So I've spent 2 days now at Defender Rear Tubs, but one a month ago, and for part one, we're going to put this in the tech section.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday, assembling the tub, but two or three tubs to get the stages. Otherwise, we would have actually gone there four times. He had a 110 rear tub, a double cab tub from a 2012 car. Now, if you saw the panel work then from the outside, or that car as a whole, I haven't seen the whole car, but you would think, well, that's a £15,000-£20,000 Defender. Wow. The corrosion that belonged underneath the rear seats. I'll share a picture on at some point on my Instagram or something. Once that trim was out, it's seriously bad. It's seriously bad.
Scary.
I would underestimate. So, like, everyone goes, oh, chassis, bulkhead. Actually, I'd start with the rear body because they're dearer than the chassis.
Yeah, the powdery corrosion.
The powder. This is like peppered and so thin.
Yeah.
And all the bits where it mounts to the steel, that's where it corrodes.
That's what I was shocked at the same thing when I've been up to YRM Metal Solutions a couple of times seen exactly the same thing. Late TDCi Defenders and TD5s, you know.
Yeah.
Then none of them are exempt. You see the level of, like, it's corrosion, alloy corrosion in the tub is really quite, takes you aback.
But it's still... We're still very fortunate that we've got the likes of YRM Metal Solution that can supply us with all those parts to repair them.
100%, yeah.
Because before that, you were having to cut it out and make it up yourself. And I mean, some of the suppliers are just brilliant with what they can...
I think it's never been so good as it is now, because you can literally... I was looking through the latest BritPart catalogue, and in fact, anyone that wants to get one... can go onto BritBart's website and either download it or order one. Well worth having. Properly thick kind of catalogue, full of all the stuff. You can just go through there and go, yeah, I need that. Look at the part number and cross-reference it with yours. Get stuff ordered from your local BritBart stockist. It's all out there to be had. It makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Relatively.
When we were kids, we had the Freeman catalogue, and we called it the Wishing Book.
The Wishing Book.
I wish I had that. I wish I could get that. Well, that's what the BritPart catalogue is like.
It's like Kids in the Sweet Shop, isn't it?
I like that. I wish I could. I want that for my Land Rover.
Oh, yeah, strategically leaving the Argos catalogue open at certain pages when you were a kid. Yeah, there's always something
in the toy section. Yeah, they are like toy. Yeah, it's brilliant.
So, Trevor, where did it all start for you then? What got you into Land Rovers, and how has that progressed into what you do now?
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own, and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
I started when I was a wee boy on the farm. There was a Series 2A short wheelbase, and that was my first bit of awareness of a Land Rover. And then I also had a friend who I went to visit his house, and I remember his father was rebuilding a series Land Rover. It was all in parts. And in the early 90s, I started then seriously thinking about getting a Land Rover, and I would buy the magazines and sort of, again, like the Wishing Book, I fancy one of those. But I never got around to actually buying one. But there was a three-pronged catalyst to what started me. First of all, I was into, and still am, into classic tractors. And when you're into classic tractors, you've got to be able to tow them around on a trailer.
Of course, yeah.
I borrowed a trailer from my uncle, and I was towing it with a company car, a Saab 900. And I went to OMA, I think it was, County Tyrone, to pick up a David Brown 880.
With a Saab.
Oh, a Saab 900.
Yes. Yeah. Well, sketchy.
Do you have like a DVSA? In
well, where do you hear? Yeah. So the trailer was bad news. There was no brakes. There was no legal lights and the tires were bad. And I'm on my way home and a tire blew. And I'm stopped at the side of the road and don't the PSNI come along? Or a cop car comes by, stops in front of me. And they just introduced points on your license at that stage.
Okay.
We didn't have them in Northern Ireland. And he talked to me very sternly and he said, "You're looking at a whole license full of points here. Never mind your dodgy tires. You've got no marker lights. Is there any brakes in that trailer? And you're overloaded." But he took pity on me and he said, "Get the hell into Ballygolly there. There's a tire place. Get it fixed and don't let me see you again."
That's fair, isn't it?
So I got the tire. Very fair.
Yeah.
Got the tire fixed. And then I'm nearly home. I'm at the big roundabout at Glengormley, known as the Sandy Knolls Roundabout. And a car moves off. Or I think it's moved off into the traffic. So I move into space, but the car changes mind.
Oh, no.
And the tractor pushes me on, and I'm millimetres away from a collision. So I vowed then, no more dodgy trailers, and I need a proper tow vehicle.
Ah.
So I started seriously thinking about a Land Rover, because they're brilliant tow vehicles. The second thing is my very good friend, Matthew Spurry, who's 15 years my junior, so he was a teenager at this stage, had bought himself a Series 3 that I think had been fire damaged or something. He got it on the road, got it fixed, and he said, "I'm joining the Land Rover Club." And I'm thinking, bloody hell, Matt's not going to be in the Land Rover Club before I am. And then the third prong was, before I built any Land Rovers or got involved in Land Rovers, I built a AC Cobra replica.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in a motor factor's called Fife's in Ballymena. And I was asking the guy about V8 parts.
Okay.
I can't remember what I was looking for, water pump or something. And this voice behind me said, "If you're looking for V8 parts, come and see me." And it was a guy called Willie Patton. Now, Willie Patton's another independent Land Rover specialist in Clock Mills in County Antrim.
Okay.
Brilliant guy, runs a great business and knows his Land Rovers inside out. So the reason he had V8 knowledge is because he did the comps of Harry Racing.
Yeah.
And in those days, it was V8s. I think he now races DD5s or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went to see Willie about V8 parts and left and bought my first Land with my first Land Rover.
He knew what he was doing, didn't he?
Yeah, right, okay.
I don't even think of it as my first Land Rover because I only owned it a matter of weeks. It was, I think, an 89 truck cab, 19J, and it was spotless. It was very, very, very well looked after. But I subsequently got a drive in a 300 TDI, and then I couldn't rest.
Night and day.
I can see Steve's little face just waiting to get a jibe in.
Imagine if your first Andrew wasn't even a 19J and it was naturally aspirated. Imagine that.
So I went back to Willie Patton and I said, "Willie, I got a drive in a TDI." So Willie was taking in trade-ins from the main dealer, Donnelly's. So he was getting lots of Defenders coming through. And he would put them through the workshop, clean them up, and he was selling real good, honest Land Rovers.
Yeah, working Land Rovers.
Yeah. No messing about. If it needed, whatever it needed, it got it. If it needed brake discs, it got it. You know, no corners were cut at all. So you knew if you were buying a Land Rover from Willie, it was going to be a good one. Anyway, I said to him, "I want a TDI." And he says, "All right, well, that'll cost you."
Sucking for his teeth like they all do.
But he then, a couple of days later, he phoned me back. "Are you still looking at TDI?" "Yeah." "You still got that pickup?" "Yeah." "I'm about to go out with the Land Rover Club to Todd's Leap." He says, "Have you done anything to it?" I said, "I put mud tires on it." He says, "Well, when you come back from Todd's Leap, clean it up, put its original tires back, on and bring it back to me and I'll do you a deal. And what had happened was there was a farmer in need who I think his Series 3 pickup had finally given up the ghost. He was desperate to get a Land Rover, and Willie knew that I wanted out of the first one I bought. So I guess he was able to sell the 90 on at a really good price, which meant he was able to trade me into a 300 TDI hardtop for an affordable price. He did me a very, very good deal. And so I always see that one as my first Land Rover. But those were the three things that prompted me. So I now had I bought a decent trailer, so I can now tow my tractors around safely and legally, and I could join the Land Rover Club, and yeah.
Look, that's, the rest is history.
That's where it started.
Can you imagine back then, though, that you would find yourself actually making a living from re-chassing Land Rovers? It's a way that it's taken you from... Because weren't you in sales or something before?
Yeah.
So
in those days when I met Willie Patton, I worked for Guinness. I was in the license,
okay.
Right?
Okay, yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't have dreamt that I would end up where I've got to. But as you guys will know, once you've bought your first one and you got over that hurdle, it doesn't take long till the next one comes along.
You always, like you say, you drive if you drive a 12J, you want a 19J, you got a 19J, you want a TDI, you get a TDI, you want a TD5 possibly, you know, if you want more power, you might want a V8. And you need to sample all of these Land Rovers, I think.
Mm.
Absolutely. So yeah.
It's boring just having one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think. Well, again, we talk about, we were mentioning previously briefly about the Land Rovers you've got now, but you say the interesting stuff, the really juicy stuff, is the projects you've got on the go.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that's tickled your fancy lately?
Well, the current one that it's been a bit slow of late, and I've been listening to the early podcast, so I'm reminding myself of what Steve's been like with his 90.
What's slow and
can't rush perfection. But sure.
I'm too busy.
I had a driving rolling chassis from a Discovery 2 with only 5,500 miles on it. That's another long story. And when I was going to do a project in the magazine, but when Ed Evans came aboard, he started making things more sensible. So my harebrained schemes were reined in, shall we say.
Okay.
So long story short, I sold the engine from that and I had these axles. And about 3 years ago, I said to Jeff at Richard Chassis, going to make me a 90 chassis that will take the Discovery axles because they're 5,500 miles. They're brand new.
Yeah.
But no one would pay, if I sold them, would pay their real value. Jeff said, no, don't want to do that. We're too busy.
Fair enough.
Okay. So a year or so later, I tried him again. I said, Jeff, get me a price to make me that chassis, would you? You're going to be able to fit it in somewhere along the line. And he said, okay, Trevor, I'll do that. So he priced up the chassis. So he built me, or Richard Chassis have built me, a 90 chassis to take the axles. They put TD5 rear tank brackets on because I was going to have a custom tank because you can't have a normal rear tank because of the Panhard rod, or sorry, the Watts linkage. Is in the way.
So you want a 300 TDI-esque like tank under the seats?
At the time we thought you can't do that either because the bracketry for the Discovery radius and trailing arms gets in the way.
Okay.
Turns out you can by bashing a dent in the tank, but. This is the basis of a 1984 90 that I'm rebuilding.
Okay.
And it's a 300 TDI that was very professionally converted. So when you lifted the bonnet of this thing, it looked like it was a factory 300. Everything had been done just right.
Okay. Well, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? Because mine's a Steve Parker conversion when the engine sits really far back.
Yes.
So you get this big void between...
Yeah.
It doesn't look OEM,
mm-hmm.
which is probably the downside to it.
Well, this Land Rover came from Essex. I've told you a lie there, because this was another one where the guy changed his mind about the rebuild. Initially, he asked me to come and get it. He didn't want to trust it to vehicle shippers. So I came over with the trailer and brought it home, and it was waiting its turn. And then he called me and he said, I thought he was calling me to give me the hurry up, you know, when are you doing my job? And he said, Trevor, what's my Land Rover worth? And I said, well, at the moment, you know, not a huge amount. And he said, could you put it on hold for now? And then about 3 months later, he phoned me and he said, can you sell the Land Rover? I'm getting a divorce, he says, and I need to. He said, sell the Land Rover and get me cash. Because it was out of sight, you see. Yeah.
The Land Rover has now been scrapped on the basis of a divorce.
Yeah, so I ended up buying it.
Okay.
And that's what I'm rebuilding at the moment. So I haven't stretched to a brand new tub like yourself, but I'm going with the new bulkhead. I've done that. Richard Chassis DDS. Similar to you, I'm going with this split. I bought split doors from SP4x4.
Yeah, it's like a Series 3 door. Mm-hmm. Only because if you take the door tops off in the summer, it's like perfection.
Yeah, especially coupled with a soft top.
It's Land Rover perfection when you can take doors off.
Yeah.
The other project I'm excited about at the moment, I'm not really directly doing it myself, is I have a Series 1.
Oh, right.
And again, I was listening to you guys talk about Series 1 in the early podcast. And I bought one in kit form, I want to say about 2016, from a friend of mine down south called Harold McMillan. Harold, he had advertised, I think, on a Facebook group, and it was like €3,000. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to buy that, because they're getting harder to buy. Mm. They've come up very infrequently in Northern Ireland or Ireland. And I went down and bought it. He wouldn't budge in the price because Harold's, you know.
The price is the price.
The price is the price. Straight up guy. And I remember loading everything onto the trailer. And as they say, it was largely in kit form. And I got home to the yard and I was unloading. I thought, it looks like I bought a load of scrap metal.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, he said, or maybe 2 months later, Harold called me and he said, you built the Series 1 yet? I said, no. He said, do you want to sell it? I said, no. He says, I'll get you €2,000 profit. And I said, no.
Okay.
But I never did get around to doing it. And I have another good friend, again from the South, a fellow called Luke Whelan, who is a leaf sprung junkie. He loves anything leaf sprung. He's got some fabulous Series 1s and 2s and the whole lot, fire engines. And long story short, Luke said he would take it on. So it actually went back down on the trailer.
You're not going to do the Series 1. Yeah.
So Luke and another Matt, not Matt Sporey, but Matt Smith, have been working on, and they're a pair of comedians. I should see some of the videos they send me. Like, they take the piss out of me all the time.
Yeah.
But they are so funny. So that was during one of the lockdowns. I remember going down and I was towing with a Volkswagen Transporter. So the Garda waved me on. They didn't send me home because I seemed to be commercial.
Oh, I see.
Whereas they were turning cars home. You know, you're not supposed to be out.
Yeah, of course.
And we did a couple of weekends, but Luke and Matt have largely been doing the work. But my daughter is getting married in August and she announced that she wants a Land Rover Convoy from Belfast Castle to the house where the reception's going to
be. Okay.
So, Dad, what have you got? What Land Rover's you got? And at the minute, my 90 was off the road. I was driving the high cap and the tipper, two pickup trucks. Mm. No good for carry.
I remember the tipper. That was in the magazine, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I contacted Luke and Matt and I said, what about getting the Series 1 finished in time for the wedding? And they're up for it. So
okay.
I'm actually going down to do a couple of days with them next week after.
You'll probably regret selling it.
I'm not selling it.
Oh, they're doing the work for you.
You're doing the work for me.
I thought you sold it to them. Sorry.
No.
Yeah.
They're
Oh, okay. Because you're too busy.
True enthusiastic.
Oh, I get you. So they're right.
I mean, every once in a while I have to give, like I gave Luke a V8 engine that I had
Matt's after a 12J engine, actually.
And hang on a minute, Matt.
As the East Anglian normally aspirated diesel collector, I might be able to help him out with Vupont. They seem to be flocking to me now.
Yeah, because everyone else is a little bit sluggish, and you're the only person that wants to buy them.
So yeah, getting the Series 1 on the road is exciting. It's an original 2-litre diesel that was supposed to have been seized, but the guys got it freed up and running. And a couple of years ago, Luke contacted me and he said, do you want a Safari roof station wagon conversion for it?
Okay.
With a new old stock rear door and rear bench seats. And I said, yeah, that sounds interesting.
Sounds good.
And he says, €1,500. And I thought, ooh. Yeah, okay, I'll go for it.
Yeah.
It actually seems cheap now.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
The time I had to think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be a station wagon.
Okay.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
There's something so special about Series 1s, especially like yourself.
I've never owned one, you see.
You were saying about your first drive-in one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alistair's one. Yeah.
Well, my first drive-in one was this very Series 1 around the yard before we'd put any roof. In fact, before it was stripped down, because the guys stripped down the chassis, repaired it and galvanized it, the original chassis. They bought new... Luke got hold of new outriggers and rear crossmember from, I can't remember who, but they're authentic, they're beautiful parts.
Okay, nice.
But before that stripped down, after they got the engine run, we were driving it around the yard.
It's just a lovely thing, to puff about in.
Mm, yeah, they really are. There's something just so, yeah, I don't know. They just feel different to any other series because they are, I guess, so
very light. Steering's all light and...
Yeah, they've just got a really nice sort of...
Honest.
Yeah, it's hard to describe. If
dainty,
had it going,
almost dainty, kind of like... Yeah, they lost something, didn't they, after Series 2 and 3.
You mentioned your tipper and your high cap briefly. You've kind of gone after quite a... you've sort of unique... Not unique, that's the wrong word. Traditional style on them. You've got the paint colour with the galvanised bits is really sort of... up my street. And Dan Dew, your good friend Dan, he's done something quite similar with his 110, hasn't he?
That's right.
It's a really good look.
The limestone over colour. It's the early 110 look, where the roof, windscreen surround, door tops and rear panels are in limestone.
Yes.
And then you've got the colour below, whether it be red or brown or you name it. And I just really like that look. So the tipper, the 130, and the red high cap are like sort of non-identical twins. You know, they're done in a very similar style, but two very different vehicles. And actually, the 90 that I was talking about with the Discovery axles is probably going to be limestone over a colour as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe marine blue.
Mm. You can't go wrong with marine blue.
It's blue in the logbook, and I've got the heritage certificate, and it was originally... marine blue, so I'm thinking,
keep it. Yeah.
Stick with that.
I think eventually, if I keep hold of my 110, that'll go back to being marine blue because that's what that would have been originally before someone blew it over.
Yeah, see, my 90 is now not going to be marine blue.
It's going to be very not
marine blue. Was Stratos blue originally,
right?
But then somebody had it painted in marine blue. Mm-hmm. I actually prefer Stratos blue to marine blue, controversially, but yeah. It's a bit darker, a bit richer.
Yeah, blue in general is not one of my favourite colours because I've had so many Discoveries of the same shade of blue, and my original Defender and that pickup, the first pickup, were blue. It's just sort of, I'm tired of it. But the marine blue, I think, will be right for that 90.
Yeah, it just that does look right,
yeah,
doesn't it? So Trevor, if you could only build one Land Rover for the rest of your life, what would it be? What engine would it have? Like, this is it. This is the keeper. No more. No more Land Rovers. This is the one.
Yeah. That's a tricky one because, like, at the moment, my favourite Land Rover is that red high cap because of the work I'm doing. It's so useful. It's brilliant. It goes well. It's a TD5 engine. So it goes really well, but its carry capacity and versatility is great. But... my 90, the TD590, which is now back on the road because it has wedding duties to perform, is a brilliant
tow car, particularly from the point of view of reversing trailers.
Yeah,
big
really
trailers
easy, aren't they?
In tight spaces. Mm.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Bigger trailer than a smaller tow vehicle.
So
easy.
If I had to choose between those two, it really depends on what I'm doing at the time.
Yeah, of course.
But I think my all-time favourite has been, I owned a 110 station wagon, again, 300 TDI, for 5 or 6 years. And it was a brilliant family car. We went to Devon in it one summer on holiday, Devon and Cornwall the following year. We went to France when the children were young. And it was a great family vehicle, yet we could go off-road and
of course,
stuff
yeah.
as well.
Part of that's down to the memory that it gives you. This
And it also demonstrates why it's so important to have more than one Land Rover.
Yeah, basically, what we're summarising here is there is no single Land Rover. You need three.
Yeah.
We have said this in the past.
Three
is the perfect number.
Yeah. So, yeah, but gun to my head, I'd probably have to keep the 90.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And it's a TD5, and that would be probably my favourite engine too.
Yeah.
I love the 300s. But the TD5 just, again...
I must admit, I've said this before, haven't I? The TD5 for me is the...
It's interesting. Yeah. See, I'm the other way around. I prefer the TDI. I think it's a smoother. I prefer the throttle cable. It's as few
well,
things
I,
about it.
I picked this up in one of your earlier podcasts, and you talked about the lowdown and the throttle response.
Mm.
A TD5 that's been properly remapped is transformed.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Mine is perfection.
I have
my version of perfection.
Every year I have Jose from TD5 Inside comes over from Portugal and we do a remapping clinic and all the guys, local guys, bring their vehicles for remaps. And every one of them, bar none, he remaps them. He says, go and take a test drive. So they're bombing up and down the Jordanstown Road, making all kinds of noise. And then they come back beaming. So pleased with the transformation he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists. Trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
It's amazing. Like you say, I agree, a good remap does help hugely. I just, don't know, I'm just still team TVI. But
The best thing to do, right, is do what I'm doing, and sounds like Trevor's the same, have a TDI and a TD5, and then when you get bored with one, you can go out on the other.
I would add to that, something that's for sale up the road that I've spotted on eBay, which I know Dan gave you a shout about as well, the Mazda 3.5 turbo diesel. A friend had one in a Range Rover.
You said it made.
Friend had one in a Range Rover Classic, and it was just like next level. Still that mechanical feel, tons of torque, and like.
That's what's in my tipper.
Yes, exactly. This is what I mean. Yeah. I think it could potentially be quite a bad influence here.
I bought a whole Range Rover that had been converted by Motor and Diesel Engineering, and the Range Rover then rotted away. But the engine was the prize, and the transmission, 30,000 miles on the engine.
That's crazy.
Nothing, is it?
Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, I know a guy, Jonathan Cully, who has one with like 300,000 miles on it, and you can't tell it apart from mine. They sound exactly the same.
Just work.
Yeah. One thing I didn't mention about the Blue 90 project with the Discovery axles is the vehicle was a 300 TDI, but the 300 TDI is not going back into it.
Oh, okay.
I have a 2.8 TGV.
Ah, right. Yeah.
That's going in instead.
Okay.
And again, that was from a motor and diesel converted
Land Rover.
Didn't you do that with the LRO 90?
Yes. That's what that had. Yes, Motor and Diesel just up the road from me, and I know Ben, talked to him a reasonable amount, and they're really, really good outfit. They do some good stuff. Are you putting that 90 auto or manual box?
Manual.
Yeah, see, I would go manual because we did the LRO 90 with the fresh, basically brand new 2.8 with the fuel pump done properly and hybrid turbo. But because we put it back on the auto box, which this torque converter is probably a bit small, it kind of defeated the object because all the low end was sapped up by the auto box.
Yeah.
I would if I did that again, I would 100% go R380.
Straight on an R380.
Yeah.
Could you put that engine on an LTSET? No.
It would. You could.
Yeah. I'm just.
They're awfully expensive to have done. If you have one done new, 2.8 conversions, they're not cheap.
What sort of money are you talking?
$2,000 or $3,000.
Easily, yeah.
$2,000 or $3,000 for
For the bottom end.
Bottom end.
Before you then have like your injection pump recalibrated and turbo and all that stuff.
It's, so you have to take bits off a 300 TDI, do you, to make...
Yeah, so they use a 300 TDI head.
Oh, so you rock up with a 300 TDI engine, essentially, do you? And then
they rebuild it, basically.
They rebuild that engine into a 2.8.
Yeah, with crank, pistons, all that stuff.
Well, $2,000 or $3,000, that doesn't make me think that's a lot of money. I think that sounds okay.
But then again, you have probably just blown four on a tub, so everything's relative, isn't it?
No.
We're on very different scales of expensive here, Steve.
No, I'm not borrowing cash. Don't get me wrong. I'm not at all.
I do like autos, but this engine came from a station wagon that I bought. And at the time, I was looking at this ad. I think it was on the LRO forum. And it was advertised in Antrim, so it was local to me. And it said 110 station wagon for sale. It was sadly the girl's father-in-law had passed away, and he had been in the process of sort of rebuilding it or repairing it, and didn't get it finished. So I was reading through it, and I thought, nah, I don't need another station wagon project. And then at the bottom it said fitted with a 2.8 TGV engine.
Nice.
And the price was right. And I subsequently found I remember asking, you got any paperwork? Well, we had old MOTs. We chucked them away. We didn't think they were of any interest. And I wish you hadn't done.
Yeah. Keep the paperwork.
They gave me a workshop manual, and within the pages was the receipt where Derek, the owner, had paid for the engine from Motor and Diesel Engineering, the R380 gearbox, and the LT230.
Okay.
The receipt. He bought all those parts. And on the outside of the envelope was written, receipt for engine and gearboxes fitted at 97,000 miles.
Right.
I was able to look at the speedometer and work out that they'd only done about 13,000 miles.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
So, hence, you know, it's essentially a new gearbox, so I would...
Got nothing to worry about at all, have you?
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you're based where you are. What is the Land Rover scene like over in Ireland?
It's good. I mean, there's a very good... the Northern Ireland Land Rover Club is excellent and very, very popular. They run some brilliant events, you know, green lanes, trials and so on. I at one stage was very heavily involved and did sort of committee work and stuff. Then there's the Northwest 4x4 Club, again in Northern Ireland. And they do a lot of stuff around Donegal, County Donegal. Mm. But in the south of Ireland, there's a couple of very good clubs as well.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, there's a pretty good scene. Yeah. And I found too, I initially thought that my customer base would be Northern Ireland, but it's actually all Ireland.
Okay.
Wow. They come to me from almost all of the counties I can think of.
We've had a couple of comments on some of our Facebook posts on what the Auto Jumble event, saying, when are you going to do one in Ireland? Is there anything that exists like that already over there?
The Club Land Rover Ireland had a weekend event there recently, 5-6 weeks ago, maybe a bit longer. It's sort of a gathering, a get-together. And I think they had sort of spares and different stalls at that.
Right.
But it wasn't a dedicated
jumble
day. So I think something like that would potentially go down very well.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because the scale in which we do like the spares days, like Newbury and Malvern, you'd have to have a decent turnout to make it financially viable.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. The cost of running events is significant, so you'd have to pass that on. I don't know. Unless you try, you're never going to know.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Maybe. Sounds like an excuse we need to go to Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm. It does a bit, yeah, yeah, it does.
Kind of like see what can be achieved.
Interesting. Yeah. It's food for thought.
Have you ever been to Northern Ireland?
No, never. I've always wanted to go. Keep meaning to
I only went January this year, and I fell in love with the place. It's fabulous. Like, it just seems like everyone's really friendly. Like, really friendly. Just lovely.
Yeah. No, we'll have to get you over and get you out on some of the...
We'll do a trip.
The lanes or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. I could thrash over there at 55 miles an hour in my 110.
You wouldn't take that. You'd take 302.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's true. So you mentioned building your workshop just quickly, because I need to segue this beautifully into a product placement, which we are obliged to do in order to keep the lights on at the podcast.
Okay.
What could you not do without, in your workshop, tool-wise or like?
This might surprise you, but the best tool, in fact, I had to get it repaired recently and I really missed it. My late uncle had a sale. He had a big auction. He knew his days were kind of numbered. And he had a big auction where he sold off all his classic tractor collection. And I didn't want to buy another tractor at the time, but I wanted to buy something, you know, because it was my uncle. Mm. And I bought this, I call it a pallet lifter. It's like a pallet truck, but it lifts high. I thought that could be useful
in
the workshop.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I would be lost without it.
To lift gearboxes in or
chassis?
Okay.
Right, okay.
So typically I will have a chassis stripped down and just the rear axle remaining loosely bolted to it. And I'll wheel it out like a wheelbarrow out to the driveway. I'll put a beer keg under one end and I'll use the pallet lifter to lift it off the axle.
Okay.
And set it down on another couple of beer barrels. The trailer's right there with the new chassis on it. The pallet lifter then lifts the new chassis off. So this is me on my own. I can't lift the chassis single-handedly without either damaging myself or the chassis. So I lift it off with the pallet lifter, set it onto the axle on a beer barrel, wheel it into the chassis, and then use the pallet lifter again to put the scrap chassis onto the trailer. It is brilliant.
A slick operation.
I suppose when you are on your own, you need to take out the weight of everything. It's dangerous, isn't it?
You're right in that I didn't see that coming. Pallet fork, pallet truck.
Yeah.
But I can think now of numerous times where one of them would have been incredibly useful to me. If I've had something delivered to, not so much my house because I've got a gravel drive, but my unit, engines, boxes, big, bulky, heavy stuff. I don't know why I don't already own one, to be honest.
Yeah, as you mentioned, gearboxes. Yeah, I use it for working on gearboxes and stuff like that too.
You bring things up to a work height.
Yeah.
It's useful to use.
When it's not doing, I mean, that chassis operation I've just described is, you know, once every month or something. So the rest of the time, it has to have justification for its space in the workshop. So I've got a little bench thing, a wooden pallet, if you like, that goes on it. And that's an adjustable height workbench.
Yeah, very clever.
So if I'm seam sealing a bulkhead, the bulkhead goes on the pallet and I seam seal it, or whatever I'm doing, it's just a movable, adjustable bench.
Yeah.
And you'll be pleased to hear, not horrendously expensive if you want to buy a new one. Machinemark.co.uk have them starting at £286, which for the amount of versatility and the engineering that goes into one of these, not too bad. The one I'm looking at is the PTE 550C, which got a 2-ton rating. And nylon rollers get it around. As long as you're not dragging it around gravel, it's probably quite convenient. And steerable, jacks up and down, happy days. So head over to machinemark.co.uk if you're in the market for such a piece of equipment. They will sort you out.
Just imagine, right, if that saved you one slip disc or something like that, where you're lifting something too heavy, which, let's be honest, when you do, don't you?
Definitely.
That's worth its weight in gold.
Well, I'm a great believer, as I get older and slower and more tired, in tools that have lots of leverage, so long-handled ratchets, sockets and so on, pry bars, but also lifting kit like that. Mm. Just try and make the job easier, because it can be hard work.
It's funny you mentioned long-handled stuff. I bought for my, when I started servicing my Freelander 2 at home, they have a really awkward oil filter and you need a flexible-headed ratchet to get on.
Yeah.
They only really sell them in long-handled form. So I bought one with a shallow socket. And I've realised after, you know, many, many years of only owning standard ratchets, why on earth did I not buy a long-handled ratchet before? They're so good.
Mm-hmm.
For like everything, I barely use the standard length one now. I use everything, not so much for the swivel head, but because it just makes life so much easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would recommend if you got a long handled ratchet.
No,
I'll get you one for your birthday.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, very very good.
Long handled ratchet.
Do you realise my birthday's in 2 days time?
Yeah, I do really.
Oh, do you realize?
Yeah. I'm sure I've got one somewhere.
Yeah, here's one that you said. Yeah, yeah.
Here's one with all the teeth snapped off. Sitting in a rusted puddle.
Yeah. So for my birthday, I'm going to spend this weekend. I don't plan on driving anywhere once I get home tonight. Well, in fact, for the next 3 days, I'm going to stay at home and I'm going to tinker on and have a tidy up in my garage. It's a mess.
Yeah, it's rewarding. And as you get more stuff back.
Yeah, I'm going to have to really, really tidy up now. I need to have a really good clear up. I need to go through all the stuff again, work out. I'm still on the hunt for a lower dash.
Yeah.
Because that's now, should have been on the hunt for one of these 6 months ago, but now all of a sudden I need one. Because once that bulkhead comes back next Friday, there's no holding me back, is there really?
Yeah.
Well, should I say us? Because I'm sure you'll want to pop over and help.
Oh, yeah.
I mentioned before about it's brilliant that all these companies are making parts that we couldn't get before. If any of these manufacturers, DDS, YRM, if you could bring yourself to make a wiper motor cover for the lower dash. I don't know anyone that's making new ones.
I don't either.
Mud Stuff are doing a lot of dash parts. They're doing the grey plastic piece and I think the top.
They do the top panel.
But they haven't yet brought out a lower and I don't think they do that cover either. But I wouldn't be surprised if they are the people to do it.
I did put a call in to them just this week, to see. And the answer at the moment is no. However, SP4x4 do make the new lower dash.
So maybe they're going to make the cover too.
But I don't know. I didn't look up the corner cover because mine's okay, believe it or not.
Mm. Most of them are absolutely hanging.
Yeah, they are. I don't know why mine's okay, but it is. Well, it was okay. That lower dash, you're going to have to dig deep.
For a new one, yeah.
700, with the VAT, £720.
Uh-huh.
I looked on eBay the other day, right, for a new old stock on the shelf, how much, including VAT?
For a new old stock one?
A brand new old stock on the shelf.
Or less than an SP one?
A little bit more.
Mm. Wow.
So £843, I think it was, for the VAT.
You don't think about these things when you're boring holes in them to put gauges.
If you've got a lower dash and you're hovering with your drill bit right now, right, or you're going to fit anything other than do not do it. Do not drill a hole in it.
I think my lower dash is pretty good in the 110. How much do you want to offer?
Yes, I think it is. You know what? But when you start to add the value of all these things...
I know.
Taking a Land Rover to bits times more than one, and the experience I have now, I would look at a car completely differently than I would have even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, changing a chassis is significant, as you know, but it's all the other bits.
Yeah,
it's the things the bodies and the wings. They're not cheap.
A big updated buying guide for people who are getting into Defenders, because up until now, really, it has been that chassis bulkhead drive line that's been focused on. But actually now, even like we said with the late stuff, the TDCI, there's so much more.
If you saw the state, and I will put this picture up. In fact, I'll probably share it with you, Martin. Martin, you put it on the LRM thing. Just highlights what could be lurking behind the carpets.
Yes.
But this car was on the road, and the guy says, yeah, I think I need a bit. You know, these seatbelts are mounted to some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These things have got MOTs, and the guy goes, oh, the body's a bit corroded. A bit? Man, it's probably...
And it's all because Land Rover.
I bet 20% of it, in terms of metal, has gone.
Wow.
Peppered, completely peppered.
If only they'd put gaskets between the alloy and the steel.
That's the other thing is the barrier between steel and aluminium.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because that's what does it.
which YRM Metal Solutions offer now. They offer all those gaskets. They're brilliant stuff.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Yeah. I've got the roll of it as well, so I can cut my own ones. Yeah. Which I would never, if, you know, for the couple of minutes it takes, why wouldn't you do it? It's, you know, you'll thank yourself down the line. Same with like copper slipping bolts and things like that. It just, you know, a couple of seconds here and there makes all the difference.
Yeah.
But so you're off to pick up a trailer full of chassis on Monday, aren't you, from Richards?
Yes, I dropped a trailer there yesterday. I think I've got 7 to pick up and a couple of bulkheads.
Right.
So when I get there Monday morning, all being well, they'll be loaded for me and I'll hook up, do the paperwork and away back to Belfast.
Happy days. Are they all for jobs you're doing or are they customers that have bought them?
Generally, or usually, it's about half and half. In other words, if I have a load of 8 or 9 chassis, half of them are for bookings that I've taken and half of them are for guys that are going to come pick them up and fit them themselves or get their mechanic to do it. So I would say this load is probably about half and half.
Okay. Good
stuff. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? And if someone's over in Ireland, because we do have quite a few Irish listeners, I can see on the analytics of the podcast, which I'm privy to, where can they find you if they want to order one or if they want job doing?
I'm based in Jordanstown, which is near Belfast. If you Google my name, you'll find the address and phone number easily. There's a contact form on my website as well. So, and also they're welcome to call in and say hello and have a chat.
Good stuff.
Anything?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure to actually spend some time with you because obviously we bump into each other at shows and things like that, but there's never any time to actually have a chat. So it's been really good to get you on the podcast.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
See what you've been up to and see what, you know, the way things are going. And, you know, it's all good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely.
And no doubt we'll be giving you a bell when Steve's got questions about putting his Defender back together. So,
I will have questions.
Be ready and primed for that, but...
Glad to help if I can. I never professed to be an expert, but I've done most jobs now.
You've done most things. Well, we were talking before we recorded the podcast. Some of it was really good content. There's no point going over it again, but it was about the airbox, wasn't it?
Yes.
Because my engine sits so far back, where does the airbox go? Because you can't get one off the shelf.
Yeah.
Being a Steve Parker conversion, unfortunately, Steve Parker conversions are no longer in business, so all the parts are kind of like...
They are filtering into eBay, though. There is a guy listing all the stuff.
Yeah, don't tell everyone, though, Martin, because I might need that stuff.
You can't buy them anywhere.
No.
Keep that under your hat.
Yeah, exactly. But I need to just... when there's a conversion involved, it's never just straightforward, is it?
No, that's right.
No, this is sort of what's...
But the downpipe for exhaust is bespoke to the Steve Parker conversion.
Yeah.
Certainly is thinking about. Yeah. But we know Dan, do you know?
You want to go to Dan at Demand Engineering.
Absolutely.
Nice name drop.
Yeah, name drop. I hope he listens to this anyway, because he's an advocate for the Sam and Sophie.
He is, yeah. Yeah. So, which has thankfully made it back from billing unscathed.
You're sitting on the unvacuumed, dusty billing.
In a white shirt.
But you look like a farmer, so you need a bit of dust on you.
Anyway, honestly, go to Dan. The work he's done on my V8.
Yes.
Sounds brilliant. It doesn't rattle on anything. And it's just, the workmanship's absolutely awesome. If you haven't already seen the video on how Dan put that together, for crying out loud, head over to the Land Rover Monthly YouTube channel and check out the probably be last month's magazine by the time this goes out, because we did a proper stainless steel sort of exhaust tech guide. And
I watched it on YouTube. Found it exhausting.
Steve. Trevor, do you agree with my outlook?
Trevor's laughing, right? No one laughs at my jokes.
Trevor, I'm surprised.
You're a funny guy, Steve. You're a funny guy.
I rate people's success on how many angle grinders they've got. If they haven't got the time to be swapping discs and things over between grinders, then I see that as like a, I don't know, almost like a pecking order, like a class system. How many angle grinders are in your workshop?
There are 3 electric ones and there are 3 battery cordless ones.
I think that might be the largest number of grinders I've ever heard of in one workshop.
I've recently bought a new one that has a very low profile head, which is brilliant for getting into tight spots. That's my
That might have been my second favourite tool if I hadn't mentioned the
Angry Spanner.
The angry spanner. The death wheel.
Yeah, so I've got
makes my wells.
On the corded ones, I've got the Angry Spanner, a thin cutting disc. I've got the cheek poker, which is the wire brush.
Oh, right. Okay.
It always throws things into your cheek.
Yes.
Oh, horrible. You get the bit of...
yeah. Always wear eye protection.
You should have, like, face shields.
Because they are horrendous, yeah.
And I've got one with the flap disc.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah. Machine Mart sell angle grinders as well. We'll just get an extra plug-in for that, because they're nice people.
We'll invoice them in a minute.
Machine Mart up in the UK.
No, I've only got... Do you know, I've only got one angle grinder, and it's so annoying when you want to go between...
And that's working on a hobby basis. It's still
annoying.
Inconvenient. Yeah. But imagine like you're switching between them all the time, doing it as a business. It must, you know, you're saving serious time by having one with the disc already attached.
Yeah, and the likelihood is you'll burn one out, won't you, after a while? And,
There we go. You can never have too many angle grinders, I don't think. I
might go and treat myself to a new angle grinder.
Get one for your birthday.
It's like screwdrivers and Landrovers. You can never have too many.
No.
yeah, absolutely. So well,
have an angle grinder per Land Rover. There you go.
I think on that pearl of wisdom, it's probably about time to wrap up. Yeah. Got anything else to add, Trevor?
Don't think so. I think I've probably bored the listeners enough by now.
Well, it's actually nice to have you in and, you know.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
About time for a bit of lunch, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, are you buying?
Sounds good to me.
Still mention this for Beth on Sunday.
Well, as usual, we'll sign off with the same stuff. Please do buy the magazine, obviously. Head to Land Rover Monthly on all social media. Give us a little follow and get involved in the comments as well. There's all sorts of back and forth going on there. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Leave a little rating or review on the podcast if you'd be so kind enough to do so. And yeah, we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Music that comes in.